Tune to Sinner's Crossroads Gospel Broadcast. This evening on WFMU, my name is Kevin Nutt. That was the great Marion Williams, Packing Up. Please join us on the message board, especially tonight, since we have our second part interview, guest DJ, with Mr. Anthony Howe. But we will have links and visuals, web addresses that Anthony speaks about throughout the interview. Please check in on that and just say, hey, let us know you're here and enjoying yourself, what you think of the show. And once again, want to welcome Anthony to Sinner's Crossroads. Talk a little bit about the selection we just heard.
That's Marion with the famous Ward Singers at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1957. A few years later, around 63, 64, I was then a 23-year-old, my fourth year at Harvard Graduate School, and Joe Boyd, whom I knew from Harvard, had recommended me to John Hammond, the great producer, maybe the greatest record producer, the man who was the last to record Bessie Smith and the first to record Billie Holiday, Aretha, Bob Dylan, and Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
And he told me that gospel was actually his favorite music. And he also said that although Mahalia was so famous for the 1958 Jazz on a Summer's Day concert, And John, by the way, was the man who brought Mejia to Chicago, brought Mejia to Columbia Records. John
yes.
said that the best Mejia was 1957. Because Marion Williams had sung so hard with the Ward Singers that Mejia had to sing hard, had to work, as she, normally she didn't have to before a white audience. Well, that really got to me. And he told me that maybe in 1964. In 2014 or 15, and you know how many years later, on my little label, I was able to release Marion singing those songs. And a couple of years later, I was able to release Mejia's performance at the Newport Festival. In the case of Marion George Ween, whom I knew because I produced a couple of concerts for the Newport Festival, he gave me no sweat. In the case of Mejia, I had to negotiate with her relatives, which I did, and wound up even paying their lawyer's fee. But all of that relates to that packing up. And one thing I think is worth noting, Little Richard often acknowledged Marion's inspiration. When I met Little Richard in 1961 at one of her concerts, I was startled, and he said, "Oh, I've been singing like her for years. She know it. She my heart." And 32 years later, when I was lucky enough to produce Marion myself, and she won the MacArthur Genius and Kennedy Center Award, Little Richard and Aretha sang for her. And there I had a chance to reunite with both of them. But what's really interesting about Packin' Up is not merely her how she inspires Little Richard, but Jimi Hendrix, you may know, started working with Little Richard.
Yeah.
And Jimi Hendrix said, "All I ever wanted to do with my guitar is imitate the sound of Little Richard's voice."
Oh, that's really
so imitate the sound of Little Richard's voice.
Wow.
A few years ago, I met Marion Williams' grandson, and I came up to him and I said, "You know, your gammy, that's what he called it, your gammy inspired garage rock." He looked at me, you know, what the heck is this guy saying?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, hearing that, you know, and also the Isley Brothers picked up Marion's sound in their song, "You Make Me Want to Shout." And then, of course, so did the Beatles.
Yep.
You know, when you hear some of these things from the distant past, you realize how long they've resonated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've always loved a cappella quartet. And even though Marion was a group singer, and the difference between gospel groups and quartets is very considerable, she was inspired by the quartets, even more than Sister Rosetta Tharpe, with whom she was very close, as if Rosetta was kind of an older sister. And so I gave her an old quartet number, "Cool Down Yonder." That's what I called it. In fact, she never sang the word yonder. She sings "Cool Down by the Banks of Jordan."
Wow.
And I include in an album, "Born to Sing the Gospel," which did pretty well, and I think probably contributed to her winning the MacArthur Genius Award, because the committee kept calling me for copies. And what I did is overdub a wonderful young guitarist named Jonathan DuBose Jr. This was over 40 years ago. Jonathan is now the top gospel guitarist, and he's very versatile. He was just chosen to overdub a new guitar in a new mix of Michael Jackson's "Man in the Mirror." And to continue the coincidences, do you remember how I was celebrating my great pal JoJo Wallace of the Nightingales?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was Jonathan who called me about 3 weeks ago to let me know that JoJo had checked out.
Yeah. Wow.
And, of course, Jonathan himself comes from a quartet family. So it's funny, again, how these things recycle.
Cool down by, down by the bank. Thanks for joining. Cool down by the banks of Jordan. Cool down by, down by the bank. Thanks for joining. But Jesus gonna meet me there. He's gonna meet me there. It's so cool.
Lord, it had better be soon, 'cause my trouble's so hard, so hard. Yeah, trouble's so hard, so hard. And my trouble is hard, you know, so hard. Yes, indeed, in my trouble is hard. Hungry and homeless people walking the city streets. No food in their belly, no shoes on their feet. Trouble is hard, so hard, yeah, yeah. Trouble is hard, so hard, yeah. Trouble is hard, so hard, yeah, yeah. Indeed, my trouble is hard.
The great Marion Williams, Cool Down Yonder. And we ended there with a magnificent moving Troubled So Hard with Brechtian-inspired lyrics by Anthony Halbert. Both tunes produced by Anthony.
A few years ago, when COVID dropped, the great Bruce Springsteen, the very admirable Bruce Springsteen, released a 20-song anthology of Americana, of the songs that he felt fit the occasion. He included two gospel recordings, one by Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, and a recording by Marion Williams, Trouble So Hard. I had almost forgotten about it. I had produced it, and I even wrote the words. Bertolt Brecht, you know,
yeah,
my interest in European culture. Bertolt Brecht, in his last days, and he was only 57 or 58, he wrote a short poem. The writer of the Three Penny Opera wrote a short poem, which roughly translates as, "Said when I was young, said now that I'm old, so when will I be happy? It had better be soon." I was in the studio with Mary, and I asked her if she knew the song Trouble So Hard. She knew a quartet arrangement I'd never heard, one that ends, "Yes, yes, indeed, my trouble is hard." I composed a couple of sort of freedom verses. The first one, "Said when I was young." I produced a couple of political verses, "Trouble in the morning, trouble in the noon, when will my trouble end? It had better be soon."
Yeah.
The second verse was, "Hungry and homeless children walk in the city." Second verse was, "Hungry and hopeless homeless people walking the city streets, no food on their belly, no shoes on their feet." From conception to realization, it was maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so when Bruce Springsteen, you know, honored it as one of his 20 exemplary recordings, that was a real thrill. And at this moment, it means a great deal to me, because
yeah,
I think our country is about as troubled as maybe ever in its history.
Yeah.
So I am really proud of that and very grateful that Mr. Springsteen recognized it.
Yeah.
I produced a couple of albums for John Hammond, both of them called The Gospel Sound. And I'm very proud of them. Oh. After doing two albums for John, I asked him if I could do a live album. It was called Precious Lord, the Beloved Gospel Songs of Thomas A. Dorsey. And I was able to record a lot of great people. Another weird coincidence, I had brought the Dixie Hummingbirds to Paul Simon. And one afternoon, I attended a session where they recorded with Paul, "Loves Me Like a Rock."
Mm-hmm.
And that evening, I produced my first session with the Hummingbirds.
Wow.
All in one day.
Wow.
And on that same album, I was able to record three sides by Harris and his quartet. Harris hadn't recorded for several years. And on the strength of that, a few years later, Shannon Williams of Nashville Records in Nashville, Tennessee, allowed me to produce a whole album by Harris. And I think I called it R.H. Harris, the Father of Them All. And it did okay. I think you can find it on YouTube, even if you can't find it with rare record dealers. And a very big moment for Harris was I united with his pastor, Leroy Taylor.
Wow.
Leroy Taylor was one of the hard singers of the Soul Stirrers when they were making those spectacular, unequaled Aladdin recordings.
Yes.
And there were two singers who were known as gospel men. That's a very big... Do you know the term, the gospel man? In quartets, back in the day, let's say that when Harris was coming in, the quartet sound, as you may remember, was the Jubilee sound, you know?
Yes.
The wonderful sound of the Golden Gates and the Heavenlies. The heart of singing, the singing that, you know, the performance of Thomas A. Dorsey, Reverend Brewster songs, the songs that would wreck the churches, required a kind of different approach. And singers who might resemble preachers in their growls And the name that the quartets gave this new fellow was the Gospel Man.
Yeah.
And sometimes you could tell him because he would wear a different outfit from the other guys. The other guys, they all wore uniforms.
Yeah.
And other times you might tell him because he would sit down. When the quartet was called, they would get up and they'd sing a couple of jube numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was time to wreck the house, you know, the Gospel Man would stand up. Well, supposedly, according to Claude Jeter, my very good friend of the Swan Silvertones, the best Gospel Man the Soul Stirrers ever had was not Paul Foster, wasn't Medlock, it was Leroy Taylor,
wow.
Who would turn out later to be Harris's pastor in Chicago.
Wow.
And I suggested they sing together, and, you know, we worked out an arrangement. They sang a duet of a song, He Never Left Me Alone. And afterward, Harris walked off. He would get emotional. He would tend to get emotional.
Yeah.
And Taylor was very calm. But, you know, amazing experience. Also, what I remember about that session, Harris came in and he announced to his quartet that Paul Robeson had died that very day.
Wow.
And by gospel standards, Harris was pretty progressive. And you may remember that Paul Robeson was a very controversial figure when he died.
Yeah.
But not to R.H. Harris.
Well, let's hear the Hummingbirds, the Dixie Hummingbirds, from that session. And then we'll hear two tracks with R.H. Harris that we were talking about. All three produced by our guest today, Anthony Halbert, on Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU.
Oh, Jesus, hear me praying, hear the words I'm saying. Must my soul with water from on high. Oh, with the word of sin around me, no evil thoughts can bind me. Oh, Savior, if you leave me, I will die. Until the storm of life is over, and rock me in the cradle of thy love. Oh, feed me, Jesus, feed me. 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 Until I want no more, and take me to thy blessed home above.
while strolling out here on Life Highway. Sometime each of us have trials and tribulations. Sometime you're so burdened down you don't know which way to go. Especially those of you that are confined in the mental institutions, hospitals, and what have you. But I'd like to say to you today that when I get burdened down various times on my life, Johnny, I sang a little song. It goes something like this, and it seems like it lifts my burden. Through the heat of the day, nighttime, I sang my little song. Since I, boy, I gave to Jesus my cold, broken heart.
My broken heart.
He never,
Lord, he never.
He never have left me. Left me alone. Have mercy.
Lord, since I
started for heaven,
oh yeah,
my
Lord,
eternal home,
yeah.
Jesus never,
Lord, he never
left me. Yes, I will wherever I go.
In the valley.
In the valley. In the valley.
I roam.
Everywhere I roam.
God never.
I know. I'm a living witness.
Have left me.
He never left me.
He never left me.
Sang the last chorus.
Oh yeah.
He never,
Lord.
I know he never.
He never have left me.
Left me alone.
And Anthony, I hope I'm getting this right. The Dixie Hummingbirds, Hide Me in Thy Bosom, from the Precious Lord. New recordings of the great gospel songs of Thomas Dorsey. Produced by Anthony Halbert, and then the two R.H. Harris tracks are taken from R.H. Harris and the Masonic Quintet, the father of them all, songs arranged by Anthony Halbert and available on that LP. And let me remind you once again, you're tuned to Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU. My name is Kevin Nutt with our guest DJ, honored guest, Anthony Halbert, this evening. And we will continue with the music here. We have Robert Anderson queued up. We're first going to hear If Jesus Had to Pray, and then his sweeter as the days go by.
Your love is richer day by day.
Anderson with his male group, the Robert Anderson Singers, Sweeter as the Days Go By. Previously, he had a female group, his Singing Caravan. Yes, that was the Caravans. Robert Anderson created the Caravans. Albertina Walker was his singing disciple. Albertina sang behind the beat. Robert Anderson was considered the first one to sing behind the beat. You really hear that in the way he sings Sweeter as the Days Go By.
Yeah.
Robert had a tremendous impact in his time, although by the time I knew him, he too was delivering flowers.
Mm.
But when Mahalia was the queen, he was the king. When he died, I called my very close friends, Dorothy Love Coates, you know, the lead singer of the original gospel harmonies of Alabama,
mm-hmm.
and Birmingham, Alabama, and I told her that Robert had passed, and the first thing she said, my favorite singer.
Wow.
Robert had a huge influence within gospel. One of the things that he did, he was traveling as a duo with another great early singer named R.L. Knowles. Somewhere, on the road, they learned just a closer walk with thee, and they introduced it to Chicago. I am told by the real old-timers, I was told they're all gone now, the people who experienced the late 30s and early 40s, that R.L. Knowles and Robert Anderson's duo introduced what would become in gospel the ad-lib style. I'm sure you've often seen gospel singers, quartet singers, choir. One singer sings and the other person immediately starts answering and ad-libs off their melody, improvises.
Yes.
That is so common. Apparently, it began around 40 and 41. I really apologize for something I'm about to tell you. Robert told me this 50 years ago. I have often mentioned, and it's been quoted very often, that the three great young quartet leads, Sam Cooke, Lou Rawls, and Johnny Taylor. Johnny, you may remember, was Sam's replacement, the Soul Stirrers.
Uh-huh.
How they helped invent soul music, you know.
Yeah.
And not too many people disagree. But what I should have noted is that there's a huge difference between the quartet style they came from and the style that they would master in rock and roll. Among other things, a cappella quartet was a cappella. In rock and roll, they had to sing with keyboards, they had to sing with orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have male quartets behind them. They would have female singers. Remember the famous chick singers?
Uh-huh.
Well, here's the reason. Robert Anderson worked with all three of them.
Wow.
Robert was the king of Chicago male gospel singers, and these fellows, all of them Chicagoans, they understood they needed tutoring. And Robert could talk their talk and explain things. So he's the one who made all of that possible. I really am mad at myself for not noting that before. That seems to me a huge part, a way of understanding how secular music made use of gospel. Yeah, and even in The Fan Who Knew Too Much, I didn't tell what I just said. And, you know, I regret that, but I'm glad to have the chance now. That's a solo, and it's very powerful. You just heard Robert of a group, but he was magnificent as a soloist. When Mahalia Jackson died, Columbia Records sent me down to Chicago to represent them at the funeral. And how's this for name dropping? I sat between Thomas A. Dorsey and Sally Martin.
Wow.
And only four people sang at the funeral. One of them was Robin Anderson singing Mahalia's big hit, Moving Up a Little Higher.
Yeah.
I think you can find it on YouTube. It's tremendous.
Wow.
It ended with Aretha Franklin. She was the last singer to perform, and she really tore up singing Precious Lord. and people got happy. It was very powerful. Clara Ward was there. Clara Ward had not been asked to speak, and she was rather offended.
Yeah.
And I knew Clara pretty well, because when I first married Williams, Marion was singing with Clara's group.
Yeah.
And though I never got to record Clara herself, toward the end of her life, she recorded for Shannon Williams in Nashboro, and he asked me to pick some songs for her. And I picked some of her kind of songs, hymns. And curiously, when Clara died, a year after Mahalia, at her funeral in Philadelphia, the songs they played were those very songs. Anyway, I went up to Clara and I said about Aretha, "Well, how did you feel about your..." I was rather fresh.
Yeah.
I said, "How did you feel about your daughter singing just like you?" She flung her arms around me. She embraced me. We did not have a close relation. She said, "I can't say that. You have to say that."
Oh.
So now I'm saying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Because Aretha always acknowledged the influence of Clara and Marion.
Yeah.
And at the last song Aretha sang before a paying audience was Clara's famous number, "Let Us All Go Back to the Old Landmark."
Yeah.
Oh, and let me correct myself here, or add, the Old Landmark is a very famous song composed by Reverend Brewster. And you remember it's sung in that movie with the Blues Brothers, the one with John Belushi?
Yeah.
Starts shouting and then does a somersault?
Yes.
Well, anyway, what I didn't know is the Old Landmark was once the word for the black church. So when Reverend Brewster is saying, "Let's all go back to the Old Landmark," he is saying, "Let us go back to our spiritual home."
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Wow.
That's pretty major, too, I think.
Yeah. That's a beautiful song. A lot of Memphis groups, especially Memphis groups,
sure,
still singing that.
Sure. I visited Reverend Brewster in Memphis.
Wow.
So many years ago.
Oh, man.
I have a sad story, but I don't know if you have room time for this. I can tell her
right
now.
Yeah. Yes. Tell
it. I may have told you, Mr. Nutt, that even though my books and my... And the records I produced have gotten wonderful reviews, which thanks to my web designer, you can see on my website, neither the books nor records sold, and they sold modestly.
Yeah.
But for about 30 years, I created anthologies of black and white gospel, marketing and television. These sold tremendously, tremendously well. Reverend Brewster had never gotten the royalties for Move On Up a Little Higher.
Wow.
So I included it in one of my anthologies, and I was so proud that finally my guy would get his money. And at that time, he was dying. That, yes, indeed, Brewster was acknowledged as the composer, but way back when, he had sold all the rights to another small-time publisher.
Oh.
So, in fact, that woman's descendants, her name was Lillian Bowles. I doubt she was living then. They got all that money.
Wow. Oh.
So I wasn't able to help my favorite composer. In 1915, could I say a word about
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Here is something that is to me quite thrilling when I think of gospel history. As I guess you must know from my personality or from my recent stuff, particularly an essay that was published in Harper's Magazine, "The Number That No Man Could Number," which you can see on my website. My web designer was able to incorporate it. And that got a lot of attention because Harper's has a huge readership. So you understand my political grievances. But in 1915, when The Birth of a Nation was released, this extremely racist film, which is an homage to the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah.
There were only two or three marches decrying it, saying what it was.
Mm-hmm.
One of them occurred in Philadelphia, and one of the marches was a preacher named Reverend C.A. Tindley, who I think is the greatest of all gospel composers. He was born deep in the 19th century.
Yes.
But he was the idol, the inspiration of both Thomas A. Dorsey and Reverend Brewster.
Mm-hmm.
He's the man who, and many, many other standards, and that all of these songs should be composed by this man. And this guy was one of the very few to stand up to D.W. Griffiths.
Wow.
To me, that is, I would say, the high point of gospel history. And of course, there really wasn't modern gospel then, although there's enough evidence that a lot of gospel traits were around, and everyone in all the churches was singing Tinley songs.
Yes.
Forever, the pastors would end their sermon by quoting the last line of Beams of Heaven. If Jesus leads me, I'll make it home someday. And that comes from Beams of Heaven and Tinley.
You know, he registered them and he published them.
And I forgot one of the songs that everyone knows that he composed, When the Storms of Life Are Raging, Stand By Me.
Wow.
That's his, too. That's a song beloved of black. The whole South loves that song.
Yeah, I still hear it.
When I'm growing old and feeble, stand by me. When my life becomes a burden and I'm reaching chilly Jordan. That has caused many Southerners, to get very emotional. That's all from Tinley.
Okay, we have Norsalis McKissick and the Roberta Martin Singers queued up next. We ready to go? The Old Ship of Zion. Here on Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU.
I was lost in sin and sorrow, on an isle in life's dark sea, when I saw far in a distance the ship it seemed to be. Then I saw, oh Lord, the captain beckon. He cried so loud and free, my child, I've come to save you. Step on board and follow me. 'Tis the old
ship of Zion,
ship of Zion,
oh, ship of Zion.
'Tis the old
ship of Zion,
ship of Zion,
oh, ship of Zion.
'Tis the old
ship of Zion,
ship of Zion,
oh, ship of Zion.
I got on board early one morning. I got on board. Ain't no danger.
Ain't no danger
in the water.
Danger in the water.
No.
Recordings, the Roberta Martin Singers, led by Norsalis McKissick. The Roberta Martin Singers, singing The Old Ship of Zion. The Roberta Martin Singers are generally regarded as the first modern gospel group. Roberta Martin was she brought in the piano sound And after that, the gospel groups were distinguished by the piano. She herself was a great soloist. She was Dinah Washington's inspiration, but she preferred to let the younger singers perform. And though she had several great, great singers, the star of the group was Norcellus McKissick. Norcellus was a short, very average-looking guy, and that signifies because gospel was showbiz, and as I mentioned before, the quartet singers were great womanizers. How one looked really did make a difference, but Norcellus looked like an average guy from down the street, and his manner was just the same, very low-keyed. I used to joke that he could make the quartet singers sound like RuPaul because he was so regular. But he had this extraordinary voice. R.H. Harris, the great quartet singer, he rarely complimented other quartet singers. But he told me that when he moved to Chicago in the late 30s, he used to go to church just to marvel at Norcellus McKissick singing. In 1953, gospel had finally hit Carnegie Hall, and my friend, the great John Hammond, reviewed it with the concert for Downbeat magazine. Well, this was gospel in what I consider its golden age, and many stars were there. Mahalia, of course, Clara Ward, the Davis sisters. But John Hammond wrote, the one who stole the show from everyone was Norcellus McKissick.
Wow.
Marcellus is leading that old ship to Zion. And I was able to record Norcellus' last work shortly before he died. He, too, was not lucky. I've mentioned before my favorite gospel pianist, Herbert Picard. Mm-hmm. He told me once, baby, when I heard that Norcellus was driving a cab, I stayed drunk for a week. And I said, Herbert, it wasn't a cab. He was in the bedpan brigade. He was working in a hospital. I'm sure you know Uncloudy Day. You know, that was the song that made the Stable Singers famous.
Yeah.
But that's really a white hymn. And the arrangement that Stable sang, that bluesy arrangement, was provided by Roberta Martin herself. Mm. Supposedly during World War II, Norcellus McKissick, who was a soldier, would show up in the churches wearing his uniform, and he would sing Miss Martin's arrangement on Cloudy Day. Mm. And when he came to the verse, oh, they tell me of the land where my friends have gone, I'm waiting for their coming every day. Supposedly hundreds of wives and sisters and daughters were falling out. There was mass hysteria.
Yeah.
And there was little Norcellus in his uniform singing it.
Uh-huh.
That's something I would have liked to see.
Oh, man. Oh,
and something else. Supposedly when he would sing Old Ship of Zion, sometimes in gospel boat tours, and in person he had a lot of showmanship, he would move about. When he would come to that verse, ain't no danger in the water, he would sway to and he would point in the direction of the water, and supposedly some of the saints would rush to jump in. He was a very powerful artist, and it's one of my regrets that I was only able to record him late. In other words, he never made an album as a soloist.
Mm-hmm.
But he did record All Ships of Zion and songs like that.
Anthony Halbert, this has been the highlight of my gospel career, having you on two shows. Thanks okay. So much. It's just been fascinating, spellbounding, and educational, and then there's so many things that I want to explore more that you said for being on the show. Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me and allowing me to talk about these great artists. To your listeners, stay strong. This is a very difficult hour for America. Stay strong.
And you've been tuned to Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU with our guest, the lovable and charming Mr. Anthony Halbert. Please revisit this show and the June 5th show on the archives and check out the playlist with many links to Anthony's productions and writings. Highly recommended. And we will set sail this evening. Another selection by Anthony. Professor Alex Bradford's most streamed song on Spotify. On the King's Highway, moving up the King's Highway. And we will see you next week.
WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and all over the world at WFMU.org.
Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. Now, three monkeys sat in a coconut tree, discussing things as they are said to be. Said one to the other, now listen you two, there's a certain rumor that can't be true, that man descended from our noble race. The very idea is a big disgrace. No monkey ever deserted his wife, starved her baby, and ruined her life, yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. And you never known a mother monk to leave the babies with others to bunk, or pass them on from one to another till they scarcely knew who was their mother. Yeah. The monkey speaks his mind. And another thing, you will never see a monkey build a fence around a coconut tree and let other coconuts go to waste, forbidding all other monkeys to come and taste. Why, if I put a fence around this tree, starvation would force you to steal from me. Yeah, the monkey speaks his mind. Here's another thing a monkey won't do. Go out at night and get on a stew. Or use a gun, a club, or knife to take another monkey's life. Yes, man descended the weightless bum, but brothers, from us he did not come. Yeah, the monkey speaks his mind.